I'm Willow Belden, and you're listening to Out There, the podcast that explores big questions through intimate stories in the outdoors. This episode is a little different than most. We're starting a new segment on the show, and today I'd like to introduce it and the people behind it to you. The segment is called The Nature Fix, and it's like an advice column, only in podcast form. Here at Out There, we strongly believe that nature has the power to help us make sense out of our lives, particularly those parts of our lives that are messy and scary and overwhelming, the parts of our lives that feel broken or out of control. The Nature Fix is meant to harness that healing power of nature and help you come up with solutions to your most pressing personal problems. Once a month, we'll answer your questions using the wisdom we gain outside to help you navigate this crazy world we live in. So today, first of all, I want to introduce you to our two advice columnists. They are brand new members of the Out There team, and I could not be happier to have them on board. After we get to know them a bit, we'll dive right into some advice giving. I've asked each of them to come up with a question from their own lives that they want help with. We'll do our best to make sense of those questions and shed some light on possible solutions. So without further ado, I'll let our advice columnists introduce themselves.
I'm Becky Jensen. I'm a freelance writer, hiker, volleyballer, and a single mom raising twin teenage boys. I live in Fort Collins, Colorado, and I'm writing my first book. It's a memoir called Serendipity on the Trail. We've talked about it a little before on Out There. And I'll pretty much try anything at least once.
Love it.
It's my claim to fame.
All right. And Angus.
All right. I'm Angus Chen. I'm a reporter and radio producer in New York City. I'm a surfer and a climber. I guess I have a tendency to kind of get in over my head.
I don't know anything about doing that.
Me either.
Okay, so Becky, I wanted to start with you, partly because you've been on the show before, twice actually. And both of your stories have involved a through hike that you did of the Colorado Trail. And the first story you did for us focused on your decision to leave behind your family, including your two kids, to go hike this trail alone for a month and a half. And your story really sort of got at this question of how doing something that seems selfish can actually be good for the people around you. And the other story that you had on the show was about learning to recognize your own beauty. And it's sort of through this experience that you had with a coyote on the trail. Listeners may remember both of those stories. Anyway, I think it is safe to say that you are an avid hiker and that being in the mountains is therapeutic for you. And I'm curious when you first realized that that was the case.
Ooh, good question. Looking back, I'd say it was probably when I was a kid. You know, being in nature always made me feel happy. It was, you know, something that made me feel strong. But one time that I experienced some really powerful trail therapy was during a really tough year in my life. So I was recently divorced. I was starting a business, and my dad was dying of cancer. And my dad was a huge influence on my love of nature, especially the mountains. And toward the end of his life, when he was in hospice care, a friend had asked me to climb Mount Bierstadt, which is one of 58 peaks in Colorado that's over 14,000 feet. You know, they're called 14ers. At that point, I knew nothing about hiking 14ers, right? And I thought that something like this was way out of my league. I was like picturing mountaineers with crampons and ropes, which is, if anyone's hiked Bierstadt, it's, those aren't needed. So anyway, I didn't want to leave my dad. You know, I thought that was too selfish to do. I didn't want to leave my dad, but my friend knew that I needed a break. And so I went, and I remember how good it felt to hit the trail again. I mean, it's something as simple as just breathing in the fresh air and to feel my blood pumping. And it felt good to leave my dad's illness behind, even if it was just for a day. And so there was this positive shift that I felt in me when I hit the trail. And I remember summiting Bierstadt and thinking, I did this, and I want to do more of this, and I can do more of this. And it felt great because I did something that was hard, and I didn't think that I could do it, but I did it. And it really recharged my well, right? So when I was on the summit, I thought, I have to take these pictures back to Dad. I got to share this with my dad. And so I came down the mountain and I drove straight to the hospital where my dad was. And I sat next to him on his bed and I shared my adventure with him. And I get really emotional about this, but the photos and stories brought so much life into his hospice room. I mean, they made his eyes sparkle. And so I started doing more hikes and bringing back more photos to Dad. And the hikes helped me take care of myself during a really sad and stressful time. And the photos and stories I brought back helped my dad escape his illness for a little while. And he could kind of live through me. And so when my dad died, it was really hard. And it was something that I didn't think I could do. It was this new experience. It was like its own unknown mountain, right? That was way out of my league. But I made it. And hiking actually helped me walk through my grief after I lost my dad. So
I love that. That's really beautiful.
Thanks.
And so then fast forward a bit, a couple of years ago, you, as we said, you decided to hike the Colorado Trail, which is, for those who don't know or maybe didn't hear your previous stories on the show, it's a 500-mile trail that goes from Denver to Durango through the Rocky Mountains. So sort of a long-distance trail, kind of like the Appalachian Trail, but not quite as long, but a lot higher. Anyway, I'm curious what sort of the biggest personal benefit that you got from that hike was.
Oh, gosh. There's so many, right? But maybe the biggest would be it took me 5 weeks to hike the Colorado Trail. And it was the biggest chunk of time I'd ever given myself, just to myself. It was like the biggest gift I had ever given to myself. And it was a giant reset button in my life. It was a massive boost to my self-confidence. You know, it taught me to value myself and to prioritize self-care. But one other thing is that it also taught me, I parent my kids differently now. You know, I stopped doing everything for them. I asked them to take on more stuff, more responsibility, and then they totally blossomed. And because of that, my relationship with them blossomed. So two big things that I took away.
So basically, hiking is the cure to everything. For
and
you,
I'm,
anyway.
And then I'm a big fat mess, and I'm on the trail all the time.
Yeah. Okay, Angus, I wanted to turn to you for a little bit now.
Yeah.
Obviously, you know, as we've discussed, hiking and mountains are Becky's nature therapy. And I get the sense that for you, it's water and surfing in particular that are sort of your nature therapy. So I'm curious why that is. What do you get from water, from surfing?
It's so much. I came to surfing kind of late in life. I started in my 20s, actually, just about a year ago, and I remember the first time I caught a wave. It kind of just changed the way I started seeing everything. Kind of in maybe not the best way, because I started thinking like, oh man, like when's the next time I can go surfing? Like all I want is that feeling again. When you listen to surfers talk about this, it almost sounds like an addiction, which maybe it is. I don't know. But it came to me at this particular event in my life happened at a time when I was pretty burned out with work, which was for years had been the most important part of my life. It was something that I spent all of my time and energy doing, something that I really just made tons of sacrifices for.
For work.
Yeah, for work. Like I used to live in DC, and I was working at a media company there, and I was dating someone who said to me, like, I feel like I'm in a relationship with two people, like you, like being me, and my work, and I feel like I'm the other woman, which was
ouch.
Yeah, which should have been a wake up call to me, but it wasn't. And I kind of just kept doing the way, like doing, like living my life the way I was doing it until I ran out of energy and I couldn't really do it anymore. At this point, I was freelancing, and I went to go visit my brother in California. And my brother had been surfing for, he's been surfing for like many years. And it was something I always wanted to try, something that, I knew that he loved a lot. And so I was like, let's go. And the sensation of surfing is not like anything else. It's not even like other board sports, like skateboarding. It starts with this sort of entrainment on the ocean around you and the environment around you. And you're just studying the environment so hard to try to figure out what you're supposed to do. Because it's really hard to catch a wave. You have to be in the right place at the right time, and you have to know when to paddle for it, how fast and how hard to paddle for it. And then waves are dynamic, almost living things. They change in milliseconds, in fractions of a second. It can suddenly open up and be something completely different than it was before, and you have to adapt to that. And what that means is your entire being, like your entire focus, is centered on this one thing, just this wave. And I remember two things happened. The first time I went out, I wiped out horribly, which means, you just fall off your board, you get hit by like a big wave, and you're tumbling around. And it's this sense of complete loss of control over your own body, your everything, your ability to do anything, because the ocean is so powerful, it humbles you. And I think I had this thought like, oh, I just need to, when you first wipe out, you get really tense, and before you're used to it, you get really tense, and you start to panic a little bit. But then you start to realize, like, it's actually okay. Like, this is, I just need to kind of let go and let go of the sense that I have to be so in control all the time, and relax and just kind of let, kind of flow with it. And then you when you do finally catch that first wave, it's this feeling of complete, it's this feeling of fear. It starts with fear, and that kind of just boils away to this sensation of absolute joy and happiness. Everything just disappears. There's nothing but like the sound of the water and the feeling of rushing across it, and this sensation of pure happiness. I'd never really felt like that before, I could just let go of everything and let go of everything in my life that was troubling me, or things that made me so afraid, of being afraid of drowning, maybe, like if that's what your immediate fear is, but also just everything from my life that was worrying me, like stuff about work, or whether or not I was sort of applying myself in the right way or doing the right thing. It was this wonderful chance to just kind of disconnect from that and learn a little bit too from the ocean.
And did that make a difference in how you approached work then?
It did. I guess two things happened. One, I started to schedule my life differently because I wanted to go surfing more. And that itself gave me a sense of balance. I now have this other priority that I needed to figure out in my life, it also gave me a sense of peace, like this feeling of peace that you get from being in the water, from being in the ocean, and surfing a wave. It it stays with you even after you get out of that water. There's this kind of after, this like sort of après surf high, I guess, that you just feel great all day. I have a friend, Ryan, who I surf with a lot here in New York City, and he was like, you know, one of the things I love about surfing in the morning before going to work is you just can't have a bad day. Like, it's impossible to have a bad day after this, because you just feel so great. There's like this kind of warmth that kind of and like sort of carefreeness. I know it's kind of a cliche to like talk about surfers being chill and like carefree, but literally it's impossible to feel otherwise because you're just so filled with this like lovely adrenaline and like sort of natural opioids and serotonin or whatever it is that's just making you feel so grand. It just kind of emanates throughout your day, and it's this kind of release of all the tension that just is unparalleled.
Well, and I've got a question for you, Angus. Yeah. What happened with the girlfriend?
Well, we actually broke up. we broke up a couple years ago, so. More than a couple years ago now.
So I wanted to move on to a quick lightning round of questions. Hopefully these will be fun. So I'm going to throw these out, and whoever wants to answer first can answer first, and don't think too hard about them. Those are the rules.
Okay.
All right. So first, coolest place you've ever been?
New Zealand.
Santa Cruz, California.
And when I say New Zealand, I have to admit, one of the coolest things was going to Hobbiton. Like, we went to the set where The Hobbit was filmed. You know, everyone's thinking like, oh, you went on this grand trek across New Zealand. Saw some cool things, but Hobbiton was awesome. I'm just saying.
Okay, coolest place you want to go, but that you've never been to.
Ooh. Indonesia. I really want to go to Indonesia, but I haven't been there.
Me too.
Ooh, yeah, that sounds great. Coolest.
Okay,
place
so
I want
like
to go
to... advice columnist trip to Indonesia sometime.
Yeah,
let's do it.
Sure, that'll be my answer. Yes.
Okay, what book has made the biggest difference in your life?
Cheryl Strayed's Wild.
It's not really a book as much as it's a short story. It's called Bullet in the Brain by Tobias Wolff. I read it when I was sort of in high school, really early in high school. And it was just such a beautifully written story that it made me want to be a writer, which I am now. So I guess it worked.
And one thing I want to say about the book Wild by Cheryl Strayed is, you know, I think that a lot of people are afraid or they're hesitant to mention that it's an influential book to them. I've talked to a lot of women about this in particular because they think that, you know, you're jumping on the bandwagon, that you read some story and you've got this harebrained notion that you're going to go hit a long trail and it's going to solve all of your life's problems, right? But there were so many things about that book and about her as a person that really inspired me to go do this thing for myself that I wasn't giving myself permission to do. And her writing is just exceptional. And so the combination of that really had such an influence on me that I hit the trail, solved a lot of stuff in my life, and I'm writing a book about it. So not that I want to be a Cheryl Strayed wannabe, but there are worse things, right?
But kind of, actually.
Yeah, but really, truly, yes.
Okay, what's an oddball, weird talent you have?
Oh, balloon animals.
Balloon animals.
And face painting.
Okay.
But I am not a professional clown. I, you know, wasted talents.
Just an amateur clown?
Amateur clown. Actually, no, I would say you might consider me professional because I was paid to do those two things while I was working in college. So yeah, there's that. Balloon animals helped pay my way through college.
All right, so struggling college students, you too can pay for college with balloon animals.
Not anymore.
Yeah.
I can hum and whistle at the same time.
What? Okay, what? Wait, no, okay, just now you have to do it.
Okay, I haven't done it in a long time, so. But normally the trick is you start by whistling and then you add the hum afterwards. Okay?
Okay, so let's hear it.
Like that.
What?
Wait, it doesn't sound very good.
Wow!
I'm a little out of practice. Awesome. But it's a thing that you can do.
I love it.
Yeah.
You're like a whistling didgeridoo, you know? It's mesmerizing.
Okay, final lightning round question. What is one thing you could do today to make yourself a little happier?
Go outside. I'm sitting in my office and I'll probably be here for hours and we'll get to this in a minute, but just getting some sunshine and fresh air. Holy cow.
I guess I could buy lunch instead of eating leftovers. That would make me a little bit happier.
I love it. Little things that can make your day better. So I wanted to move on. I asked each of you to come up with an advice question for the other. And I really love the questions you come up with. And so I wanted to get to tackling those a little bit. And let's start with you, Becky. I wanted to start with your question. So let's have you ask the question to begin with.
Well, this is a great segue from my last comment. So, yeah. So I'll go ahead and read what I wrote to you and Angus. I work from home as a freelance writer, and being my own boss has advantages for sure. I can work in my PJs, set my own hours, and head outdoors anytime I like. The problem is I haven't been spending much time outdoors lately, and I feel stuck in an unhealthy rut. I demand so much of myself that I often work 10-hour days, 5 to 6 days in a row, without taking time to recharge. I'm not exaggerating when I say I'm the worst boss I've ever had. Yeah. I know I should get outside more. I mean, there are loads of health benefits, and I want to get outside more. I love and miss my spiritual connection with nature. But when push comes to shove and a deadline is looming, I skip the hikes, walks, and outdoor vacations and adventures in favor of the work. So Angus and Willow, do you have any tips or tricks to get this nature lover outside on a regular basis and to help me establish better personal boundaries and work-life balance?
All right, Angus, what do you got?
Yeah, well, I understand the problem. I think it's really easy to let something completely dominate all of your time. It can be different things for most of us, I think, like it has been for you and for me too. That thing is usually work. I think what happens is that, how this happens, I think, is the importance of some particular task or aspect of your life gets inflated beyond a point it really deserves. And this sort of thing can kind of happen automatically because you've got all these things that need to get done. Like, I totally get it. And all those things feel like they're demanding time from you. Like, you have to give attention to all of them and the amount that you sort of feel like they're asking. I think the key, though, is realizing that the things in your life are not in charge of you. You're really the one with the power to decide where they go and how much space they ought to occupy. And it's hard to do that because it means taking away some some sort of emotion from the calculation. But I think that's actually really key here. To step back from how you feel about each task, like here's this deadline that is really important and it's causing a lot of stress, and that's kind of making you feel like you have to give it that 10-hour day. But lay them out before you like puzzle pieces that you'll try to fit into a schedule, and decide how big should this piece really be, and how big should these other pieces really be, and how can I fit them all together in a way that makes sense and is in a way that is actually livable. I think when you do this, it sort of becomes less of an emotional problem and less of this crazy hairy mess, and more of just a logistic problem that you can tackle by applying a little bit of thinking power, and maybe a little bit of flexibility will help too. Where are the moments in your life that you can actually you can actually squeeze something extra in, or where is a moment in your life that you realize you're not actually making the best use of that time, and you could be using it a little bit more efficiently. Like sometimes I'm like, okay, I'm going to spend the next, like 10 hours of this day to work on this thing. And inevitably at some point in those 10 hours, I'll take like 3 hours off to just like scroll through Facebook and Twitter, which is not like, this is not the best use of my time. When I'm on deadline and I'm trying to keep myself from feeling too crazy, recognizing that this is going to happen to you, you can actually utilize that time in a slightly different way. Like, well, at some point, inevitably, I'm going to end up on Twitter. Well, when I start to do that, how about I just go take a walk, or I just go outside and do something else that is going to help me kind of recharge or feel a little bit better. And maybe, maybe it'll help you actually solve the problem that's in front of you.
Yeah, I like the puzzle piece idea, and like, because I'm a planner, so and I'm surprised I don't do this already, but you just gave me a great reminder to do that of like carving out kind of chunks of time to particular tasks and fitting those puzzle pieces together during the day. And one of those pieces could be go take a walk.
Yeah. Right? And I was going to say, for those of us who are planners, it really kind of does play to your strength. You have to be strategic about planning your time outside. I mean, you can't just assume that it's going to happen. And I actually had an experience. I don't usually draw from experiences in college to give advice to people, but this one was, I think there are a lot of things in college that maybe we're all not proud of, but I had this experience my senior year of college where my roommate suggested that we run a marathon together. So they had this marathon planned for Earth Day, and you could do it in teams, so you would each run a half marathon. And so she said, let's do this together. And I said, well, I'm not a runner, so that might be a problem. And she said, well, no, it's fine. We'll train. You can become a runner. And I kind of looked at her like she was crazy, because it was senior year of college. I was working on an honors thesis. I was editing the school newspaper. I was taking more classes than I had time for. I mean, I was way overbooked, and which is sort of typical me. And so I said, look, I don't have time to train for a marathon. Like, that is just not in my schedule. And she said, well, what you need to do is you need to think about the training as a class, as something that is like it's as a part of your schedule that you have to do. Because yeah, if you think about it as the thing that's expendable, then right, you're not going to have time to do it. But if you think about it as the thing that you need to do the same way you have to study for your classes, then you're gonna make it happen. And it was an interesting sort of shift in perspective, because once it became something that had to find space in my schedule, it did find space in my schedule.
Right, because you're right, Willow, because it always seems like it's the thing that falls off the plate.
Exactly.
Right? If I don't treat it with the respect it deserves and carve out time for it, then yeah, it's always going to fall off.
Exactly. And so this actually was something that You know, we ended up doing the marathon. We trained for it. And it made that last semester of senior year so much better in so many ways. And it turns out there was time for everything. I just had to look at this outdoor time as being something that was a critical part of my schedule rather than the thing that could get pushed to the side for other things. So I don't know, maybe something like that, that would be helpful for you as well.
And my question for you is, did you find that because you made time, like you were out there running, did you feel that you were more productive when you did go and sit down and you did go to class and you did have to write the newspaper?
Absolutely. Definitely. Yeah. And you could eat all the food all the time, which was great.
Yes!
You just have this bottomless appetite, which is wonderful.
There's I guess one more thing I would leave you with, which is, you know, I sometimes we think of our day-night schedules as a little fixed. Like, you know, you wake up at 7 or 8, you go to bed at 12, or whatever it is. But it's not. It's actually flexible. Surfers do this thing all the time called dawn patrol. It just means when you get up before the sun rises so that you can surf when the sun is coming up. It kind of started out of a desire to surf in the best conditions because the wind a lot of the time, especially I think in Southern California, would be really ideal at dawn. But I did that twice this week. Yeah, I did it yesterday and I did it on Tuesday because I had to get to work at 10 a.m. and it was the only time I could go surfing because by the time I got out, it would be dark. But yeah, I mean, it for me, these dawn sessions are really a way to schedule in surfing into my life that, you know, where I have to get to an office or I have to be working for almost all the daylight hours that I have during the week. So, I don't know. It's something to think about. Like, you know, there are things in your schedule that are probably more flexible than you think they are.
Yeah. You know, it parallels an alpine start of, yes, you know, hiking in the mountains, you know, so there are reasons you want to, you know, get up early and there are benefits of, you know, seeing that gorgeous sunrise and you've got better weather and you get down before all the storms roll in, all that good stuff. And it's amazing. It's like, I know these things, right? That, like, I know better in my brain. The logic says, Becky, this is what you should do. But there's just this switch I need to flip to actually follow through. And so that's what I'm going to kind of commit to today is the follow through.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, it really is, it's a priorities problem. You're not making it a priority. And, you know, it's an important, things are as important as you decide that they are. And so you have to decide that this is important and put it on the calendar.
Yep, you're right.
Yeah.
All right. I wanted to turn to Angus's question now. Angus, do you wanna let us know what's gnawing at you?
Yeah. It's a pretty personal thing. I, at least since college, I've always been someone who works really hard and achieves a lot and does a lot of things. But recently, I've sort of feel like I've been slowing down. In some ways, this is something that I like. I feel a lot calmer and laid back these days. I'm happy pursuing things outside of work, like going climbing or going surfing, and not really feeling kind of regret or guilt about it, that like I'm not actually working right now, which is kind of how I used to feel. But I guess I had this kind of nagging feeling that I'm sort of starting to fall behind my peers in my industry. I don't know, maybe like I feel this way because of social media. Like I see people doing really awesome things and accomplishing great stuff. And I sort of don't see myself that way. It's maybe not a totally productive way to look at myself or compare myself to others. Especially if, you know, as we all know, the picture we get from social media is pretty curated. But I do feel like I'm just not accomplishing as much as I used to. And sometimes I get afraid, like maybe I'm maybe this is not because I'm actually working less. Maybe it's just because I'm simply less capable. And the way I feel about this is kind of mixed. Like there's a part of me that doesn't really care, which is, I think is crazy because I know myself and I should care a lot, because I've always cared a lot about this, and have been kind of competitive in a way. And I think that's because I kind of, nowadays, I just kind of want to like surf and climb and go outside all the time. I guess I don't really feel like I've exactly hit my limits yet because I'm still pretty young and I've only been doing this for a few years. But I guess I'm trying to figure out what the right pace and maybe the right place is for me when it comes to my career, and my life.
So, what do you think, Becky?
Well, Angus, so many of us can relate to what you're going through. I thank you so much for bringing up a good topic. This one's really kind of near and dear to my heart too. The hiking community has a great philosophy that I think applies to your question, and it's hike your own hike, right? So if you talk to 10 different people about the right speed to hike, the right gear to wear, the right day to go, the right trail to take, all that, you will get 10 different answers, right? So, you know, have you ever tried to keep up with someone who's hiking at a pace that's uncomfortable for you, or maybe like hike a trail you didn't choose and you don't like? It's like, it's no fun at all. And sometimes we risk letting that comparison, or like you even mentioned, like a competitive nature. So sometimes maybe that's ego. We can let that hijack our experiences and distract us from enjoying the journey itself.
Yeah, and this reminds me of something that happened to me when I hiked the Colorado Trail, which I did a couple years before Becky did, coincidentally. But I remember one point. This was maybe a week and a half into the trail or whatever. Most of us had been out for a week and a half ish, and I camped one night near a couple of other people, which I didn't usually do, but it was a thunderstorm, and so it was kind of like, okay, take cover now. And so this other guy and I set up our tents, and there was somebody who was already camped there. And so, you know, once the rain let up, we went and we talked with him for a bit, sat around the campfire together. And this guy who had already been camped there, he said his name was DJ, and we got to talking a little bit, and we said, as hikers often do, I asked how long he'd been out on the trail so far, thinking he would say, you know, a week or 10 days or something like that. And he said, oh, I've been out for like a month already. And I just remember thinking, my gosh, like, what are you doing? I mean, I was totally judging him for being so slow. And like, how could you possibly take this long to, you know, hike the distance that the rest of us had done in a little over a week? And I didn't say that, but that's what I was thinking. And and I know the other guy who was also camped there was thinking the same thing. We kind of had this look like, okay, that's weird.
But Will, that's like a classic question you get when you're hiking too, is like, how long did this take you? You know, like, yeah, how far have you gone? You know,
Everyone's always comparing. Exactly, which is another way of saying, am I faster than you or slower than you? Like, should I gloat or should I feel like you're better than I am, kind of thing? Mm-hmm. And so, of course, I started by gloating and being like, well, you're really slow and I'm way faster than that. And but then he started talking about what he was doing, and he would just, if he found a spot he liked, a campsite that he liked, he would just stay there for a few days and hang out and enjoy himself. And it occurred to me sort of after the fact that he was hiking his own hike way better than any of the rest of us were doing it, because he just didn't care what anyone else thought about him at all. He wanted to relax and take his time, and he was doing that. And I have no idea whether or not he actually got to the end of the trail. He might not have. But I am pretty sure that he had a really good time on it. And so for him, that was success. And so I kind of went from, in the beginning, like I said, I was judging him, to really respecting him for having the ability to say, you know what, I don't care what anyone else is doing. I don't care what anyone else thinks about this. This is what I want to do to be happy, and I'm going to do it. And he did that. And I don't know, it's something that I think about a lot when I find myself getting into that competitive rut and feeling like I'm falling behind other people or feeling like they're doing better. It's like, well, you know, hike your own hike. It's okay. You don't have to do what everyone else is doing.
And from the outside looking in, Angus, it sounds like you're doing a really good job of hiking your own hike right now. You know, and I don't want this to sound like a cop-out answer at all, but you are really the only one who can determine what your hike looks like, right? What that place is, what the pace is that feels right for you. Only you know, like, what the trails are that you want to explore, you know, what you're curious about in your career path, right? And it seems like you're happy when you slow down and spend time in the outdoors, because you mentioned you like the slower pace in your life right now. And you seem more unhappy when you compare yourself to your peers. So, you know, you used words like, you know, kind of feeling stuck or unproductive. And so this is easier said than done, right? But, you know, maybe consider limiting exposure to social media a bit, you know? And also keep in mind, I think the fear of missing out goes both ways. So I bet that many of your peers, you know, the people that you think are kind of accomplishing these great things and leaving you behind career-wise, are probably looking at your Instagram posts, dude, and the ones of you surfing and rock climbing, and they're saying, now that guy's living it right. You're doing it right.
Yeah.
You know, there's a book that's called The Top Five Regrets of the Dying. It's written by this gal, Bonnie Ware, and she's a palliative care nurse. I think she might be from Australia. Anyway, after years of interviewing the dying, she found that she has, like, of course, the top five regrets, but the top two are, number one, I wish I'd had the courage to live a life true to myself, not the life others expected of me. And number two, I wish I hadn't worked so hard. So, Angus, if this was your last day on Earth, would you have these two regrets?
I don't think so.
So then you're doing it right.
You're doing it right, dude. You're hiking your own hike. Keep up the good work. Keep surfing.
So just surf and climb all the time. You'll be set. It's fine.
Yeah.
Maybe work enough to pay the bills, too.
Yeah.
Is this where we put in the legal disclaimer for our career advice?
don't try this at home.
Right.
Do what you want. The only thing you have to lose is your job.
I love that. I really like that. We also, you know, sort of going along with that, I had in college at one point, I don't know why I keep bringing up college analogies for this, but anyway, I had a friend in college who was like this, like, super overachiever, but he would always, if something interesting came up to do, he would always do it. And his rule of thumb was, what am I going to look back and remember a year from now? Am I going to remember, like, sitting at my desk to finish that paper? Or am I going to remember going on this adventure? And so he would go on the adventure, and somehow everything was fine. And he's very successful and works at Google now and, you know, has a family and all that. So I don't know. I don't think you're going to fall behind too much just by doing the things that you love. And even if you did fall behind in a sort of traditional sense, I don't think it's really falling behind if it makes you happier.
Yeah, and I don't want to be on my deathbed saying, and I don't think this would happen, of me saying, I wish I had worked longer hours, and I wish I had had less fun, you know?
Yeah, life's short. Have fun. Go surfing. Right. All right, so those are your advice columnists, Angus Chen and Becky Jensen. And this is where you, our listeners, come in. We want your questions. What are you struggling with at the moment? What dilemmas are you facing? What's bothering you? If you have a question for Angus and Becky, get in touch. Your questions can be about any aspect of life, and it doesn't matter whether or not they're related to the outdoors. Either way, we'll use lessons from nature to help you sort things out. And I should say, we're not looking for recommendations about gear or things like that. We want these questions to be more personal. So if you'd like us to help you out with something you're grappling with in your life, we would love to hear from you. There are two ways you can get in touch. The best way is for you to send us a voice memo with your question. Just record yourself asking the question and email it to me. My email is willow@outtherepodcast.com, and it's listed on our website as well, of course. If you don't feel comfortable sending us a voice memo, you can also email me your question in written form. I can't wait to hear what you come up with. A big thank you to John Barth, Dan McCoy, Robin McDonald, and Deb and Vince Garcia for their financial support. If Out There has made a difference in your life, I hope you'll consider supporting the show as well. Now that we're doing this advice segment, we'll be bringing you the show 3 times a month rather than just 2, and down the road we hope to produce the show weekly. But doing that costs money, which is why we're asking for your support. If you believe in our mission and you have the means to contribute, please do so. Just head over to our website, outtherepodcast.com, and click support. You can make a one-time donation, or you can contribute to our Patreon campaign, which lets you make smaller donations on a monthly basis. That's it for this episode. Our marketing and business development director is Alex Egerking. Our theme music was written by Jared Arnold, and our two brand new advice columnists are Becky Jensen and Angus Chen. Have a beautiful day, be bold, go outside, and find your dreams.